Hello, my name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we are learning Masechet Megillah. Welcome back. We are on Daf Chaf Hei Amud Aleph, that's 25A, on the third wide line right in the middle. This series of recordings is a joint project of OU Torah, the OU Department of Synagogue Services, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. At the end of our last recording, we had a teaching in the name of Rabbi Chanina, so we are going to give another teaching in the name of Rabbi Chanina, even though it's not directly related to our topic. Which is Torah reading and other synagogue-related halachot. Amar Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina said, and it's a famous teaching, Hakol bidei shamayim, everything is in the hands of heaven, chutz mi yirat shamayim, except for the fear of heaven. Shenemar, as it says in Devarim, chapter 10, verse 12, Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Bet, Ve'ata Yisrael, and now Israel, Ma Hashem Elokecha Shoel Me'imach, what is Hashem your God asking of you? Ki'im li'irat Hashem Elokecha, except to fear Hashem your God. So that's what Hashem asks of us. In other words, that thing is not in the hands of heaven. It's given over to our own human free will. Tosfos asks a question on this, which is there is another statement in the Gemara in Ketubot that says, Hakol bidei shamayim, chutz mitzinim pachim. Everything is in the hands of heaven except for chills and fevers or cold and hot. So these two things don't seem to go together. Is it really true that everything is in the hands of heaven except for the fear of heaven? So Tosfos identifies them as referring to two different categories of challenge that we have in our lives, and I think it's interesting. The one related to chills and fevers or to cold and hot, that refers to the experiences you have in your life. That's what Tosfos says. All the experiences you have in your life, you're going to have lots of different experiences as you go through life, and the way in which you choose to respond, to those things is up to you. Or the experiences that you choose to put yourselves into, you decide where you go and what you do, and so those things are in your hands. So that's referring to your experiences. But here, we're referring more to your personality. So Hashem might make you wiser or less wise, more impetuous, more prone to anger. Like, you have all of this sort of personality that you're born with that Hashem gives you, but you still have a choice as to whether or not you use your personality for the fear of heaven or not. And that's what he says here. Hachamayri b'toldot ha'adam, imi yachachamot yipesh, that you're born a certain way, but that you can overcome the way in which you were born in order to embrace Yirat Shamayim. It's your choice, regardless of the skills and attributes that you were born with. Okay, now the question the Gemara has is a slightly different one, which is the verse makes it sound like all Hashem wants from you is that you should fear Him, that you should have Yirat Shamayim. It's no big deal. That's all Hashem wants, just some little thing, fearing Hashem. And the Gemara is a little bothered by that. Michlal diyira milta zutartihi. Is this to say, or should we derive from this, that the fear of God is some tiny little thing of no consequence? And the Gemara answers very surprisingly, yes, it is a small thing. Legabi Moshe Rabbeinu milta zutartihi. For Moshe Rabbeinu, who was a tremendous spiritual and moral tzaddik, a giant, there was a small thing. For him, it was no big deal. So this is being written from his perspective, which is kind of strange because it says, V'yata Yisrael, and now, O Israel. But it's the words of Moshe. So from Moshe's perspective, the fear of Hashem was a no-brainer. It was not a hard, not a challenge. And the Gemara gives an explanation of this. Mashal, la'adam shemavakshin himenu kli gadol, like a person from whom you ask for a large vessel, a giant basket, let's say, v'yeshlo, and he has that giant basket, dome alav kikli katan. It seems to him like a small thing because he has it. It's just sitting there in his possession. So to him, it's no big deal. Katan, but if you ask someone for a small basket, the ainlo, and he doesn't have it, dome alav kikli gadol, then it seems like an incredible challenge. So whatever it is that we have seems easy to us, and whatever it is that we don't have seems hard to us. So from Moshe's perspective, the fear of God was easy, even though from our perspective, it may be difficult. Now, there is one other interesting thing about these verses, which is it does make it sound like that's not the only thing that Hashem wants from us. The verse itself says, "V'atay Yisrael, ma Hashem Elokecha shoel meimach." What does Hashem want from you? Ki im li'irat Hashem Elokecha, except to fear Hashem. But then it says, "Lalechet bechol drachav," to go in all His ways, "ula'avoto," and to love Him, "v'la'avod et Hashem Elokecha," to serve Hashem your God, "bechol levavcha v'chol nafshecha," with your heart and with your soul, your whole heart and your whole soul, "lishmor et mitzvot Hashem," to keep the mitzvot and chukotav, all of His chukim. So it sounds like actually Hashem is asking quite a lot of things, and not just yira. So I think there are two ways to look at this. One way is to say that yira is the foundation of all those other things. So when it says all Hashem is really asking you to do is yira, it means that all of the keeping of the rest of the mitzvot and the walking in Hashem's ways and doing all the mitzvot, all of that is foundationally comes from the fear of heaven, that you can't really do those things successfully unless you have the fear of heaven. So in a way, that's the general topic, and the rest is just details. Now, if we look at it that way, we can also interpret it in a slightly different way, which is that it might be easy, or it might seem easy to some people, to say in general, "Oh yes, I'm a God-fearing person. Fearing Hashem isn't that big. It may not seem like such a big deal to say I can be God-fearing." And that's in the abstract. But when it comes to all the details, to actually putting into practice our fear of God and keeping all the mitzvot and serving Hashem with our whole hearts and with our whole souls, now that's a different matter. That is challenging. That may only be easy to a person like Moshe. So in the abstract, saying that I'm God-fearing is no problem, but putting it into practice in our lives, that is a more challenging matter. Okay, we're going to continue on. We are 2, 4, 6, 7 lines down on the wide lines. Amar Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira says, "Ha'omer Shema Shema," one who says Shema and then repeats the word Shema again, "Ke'omer Modim Modim Dami," is just like one who repeats the word Modim. And we learned in our previous recording in the Mishnah that one who says Modim twice, Mishakinoto, we shut him up. We tell him, we stop him in the middle of his prayer, and we tell him that he cannot continue to daven in that way. So the same thing would be true of Shema Shema. However, the Gemara has a question, because we have a Braita that teaches differently. Meitve, a question. Hakorei et Shema, one who reads the Shema, Vikofla, and doubles it up. In other words, repeats it, Shema Shema, Harizem Meguna, this is inappropriate or disgusting. It's an inappropriate behavior. So the Gemara says, Meguna hu dahave, it is inappropriate to say Shema Vikofla, to say Shema Shema, Shtuke lo meshatkinenle, but we don't shut him up, we don't make him stop. So there's a contradiction. When he says Shema Shema, is it like Modim Modim, in which case we have to shut him up, or is it inappropriate, but we let it go? So lo kasha, the Gemara says, not a problem, we'll work it out. It's referring to two different cases. Had amar milta milta, one case is where he says it word by word. So what it seems to mean here is he says Shema, Shema, Yisrael, Yisrael, Hashem, Hashem, Elokeinu, Elokeinu. He's repeating it word by word. The Tanilan, he continues on. Had amar psuka psuka v'tanilan. One is where he is doing it verse by verse, where he says Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and then he says it again, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. So the only problem is the Gemara does not clearly explain which one is simply inappropriate and which one is so inappropriate that we shut him up. And there is a dispute among the Rishonim as to which it is. Rashi says that the really bad one is saying it verse by verse, and then you shut him up. But if he says it word by word, it's meguna, but we don't shut him up. And the Ran says it the opposite way, saying it verse by verse is inappropriate but okay, whereas saying it word by word really is, is really so inappropriate that we shut him up. And I think we paskin against Rashi in this, if I am correct. Okay, one other question related to this topic, which is a reasonable question. Amar le Rav Papa la Rava. Rav Papa said to Rava, Vidilma, perhaps, me ikara, in the beginning, lo kivein date. He didn't have the proper kavana. So the question is, what's his intent in repeating Shema? So the Rav Papa says, how do you know that when he said Shema the first time, he didn't have proper kavana? When he realized he didn't have proper kavana, he centered himself, focused himself, and then says Shema again with the proper kavana. Vahashta, now, the second time, kivein date, he has the proper kavana. In which case, not only is he not doing something inappropriate, but he's doing it exactly the appropriate way. If he said Shema without the proper kavana, he probably wasn't even yotze. So he really should say it again. So Rava answers in a sarcastic sort of way. Amar Le, he says back to him, Chavruta klape Shmaya? Is Hashem your buddy? Are you acting like Hashem's your buddy and you get to do a do-over? No problem. I wasn't really paying such close attention the first time I spoke to you, so we'll just do it again. You know, very casual, no biggie. I'll just say Shema, I didn't have proper kavanah the first time, I'll say it the second time. Is that the way you act before Hashem? It's not the appropriate way to act before Hashem. If you're going to act before Hashem, you prepare yourself and you center yourself and get yourself in the right mood so that when you step in front of the King of all Kings, you have the proper kavanah. Now, you know, Lemaisa, you're not always going to have the proper kavana, but we're not going to say, like, this is no big deal. You can just say Shema twice. That's not the rule. The rule is that you should get yourself prepared to say Shema the first time. Now, and also, perhaps it may be different if you're an individual. So if you start to say Shema and you realize you didn't say it with the proper kavana, maybe as an individual you can go back and say it again. And that's a halacha question that is dealt with in Or HaChaim. Usually what we say is just the first pasuk, we go back and say it again, and anything else we do not. But if you're the shliach tzibur, if you're leading the congregation, we can't have shluchei tzibur that are repeating the prayers because they didn't have the proper kavana. You have to have the proper kavana the first time around, and that has to be the rule. So Rava says further, ilo mechavin date, if he didn't have proper kavana, machina le barzavta denafcha ad mechavin date, get out a shovel and beat him with it until he has the proper kavana. Now, I'm not sure that beating him with a shovel is exactly what would help, but I think what we're saying is that he should have the proper respect and yira that he should basically feel like if he doesn't, daven properly for the tzibur, that they're going to beat him with a shovel. Alternatively, Rashi says that this implement, arzavta denafcha, which sounds like some kind of tool that is used for like a blacksmith, like something related to a bellows. I don't know exactly what it is, but he says it's related to the word makevet, which was the tent peg that Yael used to drive through the skull of Sisera. In other words, it's a sharp implement. So depending on how we look at it, unless we're thinking that it refers to the thing that holds the tent up, in other words, you've got to drive the stake into the ground to hold up the tent, so you have to get yourself centered in order to have the proper kavana. That's one possibility. Another possibility would be that it's something sharp, so that you need to sort of prick yourself, you know, pinch yourself or poke yourself to wake yourself up so that you have the proper kavana. And anyway, we certainly don't want to say that a person should just be able to get up and say Shema as many times as they want to, because it's no big deal to repeat yourself in front of Hashem. Okay, we go on to the next section of the Mishnah at the two dots, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 lines up from the bottom. Hamechaneh be'arayot mishatkinoto, one who is interpreting the sexual laws in an allegorical way, we shut them up. Tana Rav Yosef, we have a teaching in the name of Rav Yosef. Kalon aviv v'kalon imo. Instead of translating it, ervat aviv, the nakedness of his father and the nakedness of his mother, he translates it, the shame of his father and the shame of his mother. And since shame is a much broader category, he then interprets it in a non-literal fashion. Okay, next line in the Mishnah. Ha'omer umizaracha lo titein lahavir lamolech. And you cannot give of your children to the worship of the deity Molech. Tana dvei Rabbi Ishmael, we have a teaching in the Academy of Rabbi Ishmael. B'Yisrael haba al hakutit, what we're referring to here, or the way in which it's being translated here, is a Jewish man who has a relationship with a kuti woman, a non-Jewish woman. V'holid mimena ben, and he gives birth by her to a son, lavodazara, for idol worship. Hakatub medaber, that's what you're saying the text is referring to. So this is the version that we're saying is inappropriate. What the mitzvah in the Torah is saying that you should not allow your children to be sacrificed to the fire god Molech, but to interpret it as about getting married or having sexual relationship with a non-Jewish woman is not the meaning of this verse. And that's a way of taking it out of the Chachamim's interpretation. Only interesting challenge here is that if you look in the Pasuk in Vayikra Yudchet, there are two Aramaic translations that are in most Mikra Ot Gedolot. One is the translation of Onkelos, Targum. And the second one is what's called Targum Yonatan ben Uziel, or some people call it Pseudo-Jonathan. They think that it wasn't actually written by him, or Targum Yerushalmi. And in that Aramaic translation, it actually translates the verse this way, that the meaning of the verse is that you should not get married to or have a sexual relationship with a non-Jewish woman, that's the meaning of the verse. So the Maharsha asks this question, and he answers that it might specifically mean not getting married to a woman who is part of the cult of Molech, because if you're just a Jewish man and a Jewish woman, the odds of your sacrificing your children to Molech are much less. But if you marry or have a relationship with a woman who is part of the cult of Molech, then what's probably going to happen is that your children will end up being part of the cult of Molech too, and they could be sacrificed in that fire ritual. Okay, that takes us up to the Mishnah. So we're continuing the Mishnah. The Mishnah goes back to this topic of Torah reading, in which we said that in ancient times, they read the Torah in the original Hebrew, and then they had someone who translated it into Aramaic. And the main reason for translating it into Aramaic was so that everyone could understand it. They did not have, art scroll or Koran, Chumashim, and Shul. And so the only way that someone who was unlearned could know what was being read in the Torah is if they translated it into the vernacular. So there are some sections of the Torah that are particularly challenging. Either they are easily misunderstood by an unlearned person, or they are kind of shameful for the Jewish people, and we don't want to say them out loud in public. Perhaps we could deal with it in a private setting, a classroom setting with a teacher, but in the middle of shul, we don't want to say these shameful things out loud. So that's the discussion in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah brings a number of cases in which, some of which we do translate and some of which we don't. So it begins by saying, Ma'asei Reuven nikra v'lo mitargem. The actions of Reuven, we read it in the Torah, which is obvious. Of course, we have to read all the words in the Torah. V'lo mitargem, but we do not translate it. Now, the action of Reuven is found in Breishit Lamed Hei. And it says, Vayelech Reuven, and Reuven went, Vayishkav et Bilha Pilegash Aviv, and he slept with Bilha, who was the concubine of his father, Vayishma Yisrael, and then Yaakov heard about it. So this is obviously a shameful episode for Yaakov and for Reuven, that this thing happened in their family. And the rabbis, of course, interpret it, and the translation of it is slightly different, which is that Reuven simply moved his father's bed from one tent, from Rachel's tent, into Bilhah's tent, not that he actually slept with her. So in a way, translating it would maybe clarify that this is not as shameful an incident as it sounds like, but nonetheless, we do not translate this incident in public. On the other hand, Ma'asei Tamar, the action of Tamar, Nikra Umetargem. We read it not only in the Hebrew, but we do translate it. The action of Tamar is when Tamar, who is Yehuda's daughter-in-law, dresses up as a prostitute and seduces him. So Yehuda, the father-in-law, ends up having an intimate relationship with Tamar, and that is also kind of a shameful incident. Nonetheless, we translate it. So the Gemara will ask why one and not the other. We'll get back to that. The next pair, Ma'ase Egel Harishon Nikra Umetargem, the story of the golden calf, which is a shameful incident for the Jewish people, that they worship the golden calf, that is read in the Torah and is also translated. The Hasheni, but the second part of the incident of the golden calf, which is when Aharon tells over the story of what happened when Moshe gets back, Nikra v'lo mitargem, that is read in the Torah, but we do not translate those verses. Birkat Kohanim, the blessing of the Kohanim, which sounds like the kind of thing that you would want to translate, but we'll see in the Gemara what the problem is. Ma'asei David ve'Amnon, the story of David and Amnon, and this is referring to a terrible story in which David's son Amnon rapes his half-sister Tamar, here it says, Lo nikra'in v'lo mitargamin. We have to add in that extra word, at least according to some girsa'ot, that they are not read and not translated. That might be fine for the story of Amnon and Tamar, but it's very problematic for Birkat Kohanim, which we do read out loud. Perhaps we need to separate the two of them. And finally, the Mishnah concludes by saying, Ein maftirin b'merkava. We do not read the first chapter of Yechezkel, which is called Maaseh Merkava, the story of God's chariot. We don't read that section as a Haftorah. We do not paskin like this Mishnah. Actually, on the holiday of Shavuot, we read the first chapter of Yechezkel as the Haftorah, so we don't hold by this. And we'll see, we follow Rabbi Yehuda, who is the next opinion. Rabbi Yehuda matir, Rabbi Yehuda permits it, and so do we. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer says, Ein maftirin b'hoda et Yushalayim. We also do not do a maftir of Hoda et Yushalayim, which is the 16th chapter of Yechezkel, which is a very shameful chapter for Yerushalayim. It talks about all the sins and calumnies of Yerushalayim, and so we're saying that we shouldn't have a Haftorah in which we say all of those things out loud either. Just one interesting thing about that chapter is that although there are many horrible and shameful things in that chapter, there is also a very frequently quoted verse that comes from that chapter, which is the psukim that we say, Va'omar lach b'damai chayi, Va'omar lach b'damai chi, by your blood you shall live, which we say both at circumcisions and also in our Passover seders. So there are some psukim from that chapter of Hodat Yerushalayim that are very frequently mentioned in our liturgy, but the chapter as a whole, which deals with the shame of Yerushalayim, is not usually read as a Haftorah. There is some question among the Rishonim whether or not we paskin like this, like Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah here or not, but that will be a topic for another time. Okay, we'll stop there and continue on in the Gemara in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.